She should be.
You use that word international. See, we have international letters.
That's right.
So now you can say that you spoke internationally.
Night Sky Song is broadcast around the world. Really big in Europe.
It's really big in Europe. Almost equally big in Europe as it is here.
Almost equally as big in Europe as it is here.
Yeah, you do have some followers from over there, don't you?
Someone in
Australia. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'm called very frequently by strangers for spiritual advice.
What's a different perspective than what they would oftentimes get? That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. We just had a little Firefox flaw. So you start talking about shit and the whole internet goes down. I guess we're still live. Who knows?
Well, you can just stare at yourself and pretend that.
I do. So. I do that a lot.
Creates an ambiance.
Yeah. I look at myself a lot on a non-broadcasting screen just to see what facial expressions and tone of voice make it appear as if I'm the most enlightened.
And the most sincere.
And the most sincere.
Beaming helps.
Beaming? I like to practice some beaming.
Eye beaming
and
toggle between soft speaking and loud speaking.
Soft speaking. Change
dramatic, dramatic flares. Hand waves.
Yeah.
Pink Floyd t-shirt. I mean, that had an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Very different effect than this flowery thing.
Well, I pulled one of
Beth's
blouses out of the closet. It was dark, and I went with it.
They're probably not going to be scared by the flowers.
No one could be intimidated by this look.
More like a 90-day man in Florida kind of thing going on. It's like, hello. So,
regurgitating
welcome.
Scorpions.
I was listening to another Fresh Air Terry Gross interview with Maria Bamford. You know who that is?
No.
She's a comic. She's extremely neurotic, you know, all kinds of psychological, psychiatric problems.
And nice.
So she's pretty funny.
I bet.
You know? And she had a special ad. It was called Ask Me About My New God.
Oh, that's crazy.
just the name of it. I didn't see it, but oh my goodness, it sounds sounds perfect. I mean, just the name of it. You couldn't improve upon it beyond the name.
What's her name?
Maria Bamford. She does some voiceovers and stuff like that. I think she's sort of tall, dark-haired, and she does these kind of odd, squeaky voices, and she always talks about like bizarre things, like, you know, her obsessive thoughts about like chopping her parents up into little pieces. And
we all have the same thoughts.
You know, things like that. You know, just like bizarre.
Are they alive? Apparently.
Yeah. She did a show with her parents as the only audience members in her parents' home.
That's funny.
And a guy on an organist, on the organ. And, it sounded weird. And evidently, the way she actually got over that problem with that obsessive, those kinds of obsessive thoughts by some therapy where you actually go full bore into imagining the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. And it's just sort of so intense for so long, it's like, you know, it just sort of frees you. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like spiritual searching.
Spiritual searching is like that.
Maybe.
Nothing left to be afraid of.
Death is never the worst. In the trying to see what's the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
It's everything that would precede death.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But in a way, I think it relates, because I remember I have always been listening to it. I've listened to so many hours, so many podcasts and retreat things and stuff like that. I may not have gone to a lot, but I've listened to a lot. Eckhart Tolle and all these different people. And I don't know. I just don't have a lot of desire to hear too much of that stuff. Every once in a while I'll put something on and it's like, okay. But that's the immersion thing, I think, to some extent. I get so used to hearing these cliche terms and expressions and stuff like that. It doesn't lose their power after a while.
Mm-mm. It's a three-pronged approach to suffering.
Sorry.
That's your fault. The Buddha only had two prongs. It's better to have three.
Life is suffering. There's a way out of suffering. I mean, are we not going that way? Or?
Yeah, well, that's the Four Noble Truths.
Okay.
Yeah. He had Four Noble Truths. He had an Eightfold Path. He had, you know, three characteristics. But suffering was, you know, boiled down to attraction and aversion. Just two. It's not good enough. The this new religion, Night Sky Sangha religion, is three prongs. Three prongs. Then we could go to one. I want to outsmart the Buddha, basically. So we go with three prongs and then to one. So the prong number one is you've convinced yourself that you're not God. That must mean that someone else or something else is, but not you.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. Prong number two is that whoever you might imagine God to be, which is clearly not you, you don't trust her. Because you have a better plan. You always have a better plan. And prong three is the last thing on your mind is cessation. Which you could say is you're just not interested in dying. And that's it.
As opposed to the two, which are what again?
Attraction and aversion.
Attraction and aversion.
Yeah. Well, Buddhism doesn't have the benefit of, you know, the God thing, because they don't have a God thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they still do, you know, in their own ways.
But like, it's not really externalized, though, is it?
Well, Lord Buddha.
Oh, well.
It's one way.
Well, and all of it is just an idea. So any idea that you have is a God, you know?
That's right.
An idea.
If you have an idea.
Behavioral thing that's, or whatever it is that should be occurring that's not occurring.
Yeah.
That's God.
Yeah.
It's like,
oop. Yeah. That's right. If you have an idea, you have a God of some kind. So we live.
You anthropomorphize. You have the God right away in some weird way.
Yeah.
Yourself, you know, anthropomorphize yourself.
So we, you could say, misunderstand or take no delight in presence itself. Because we're under the influence of these three. You know, semi, if not unconscious, motivators. You convince yourself that you're not God. Whoever you take God to be, consciously or otherwise, you don't trust. And the last thing on your mind is an interest in cessation. You want your enlightenment, if that's an interest of yours, to be appearing. You want to be the enjoyer of realization or the fruits of realization. Again, the last thing on your mind is cessation. So realization has to show up as a, you know, something to speak about, something to write home about, something to tell others about in whatever poetic or flowery or ecstatic language you may use.
I wonder how it works in a symbolic way. In other words, where we deal mostly in verbal, you know, memes, you know, constructs and stuff like that. But for somebody that just doesn't engage very much verbally or in the story of affection, either a dancer, a musician, or an artist, or something like that, or a mathematician, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like you have to have, the feeling, at least initially to me, was that there has to be some kind of a sense made of something, you know, in a logical way, or in a verbal way, or in something like that to get a handle on. And then you realize this is just circular, it doesn't really go anywhere. You start to wonder, maybe these people that just like sort of do their thing. Remember, there's Sufi Sam. I don't remember too much about him. It's just this from way back when, in the early days when I was getting involved with things. This guy, he was older at that point, and all he would just dance. That's like it, you know? And he was always smiling and embracing and stuff like that, and very little to say, you know? But, and he seemed like sort of a nut to me, you know? But he seemed to have it going on. So sometimes I don't know the words. Maybe, like in this case, it seems like the words are used a little differently than in many cases where they're not gelling into an idea. They're more like acid on the idea or something like that. You know.
Well, it's a radical invitation to begin to notice that being has its own vocabulary. Which does not self-convey as words. The language of being is not compulsed by time. It has no future. And it's, you could say it's relieved itself of the voyeuristic interest in its own past. All right? If we're embroiled in our own past, it's a kind of a voyeurism.
Future.
Yes. That's right. Consciousness as voyeur. It's nosy. Right? Consciousness wants to get into everyone's business.
Every single like sound is like, that's about me, right? This is about me. What does that have to do with me? It's like, what this does? That's just a sound. It doesn't make, like, I mean, it could just be anything, like a door from a neighbor. Does that have something to do with me? It was kind of loud. Maybe they're angry. I mean, it's like, dude, this doesn't have anything to do with you. It's crazy. It's constant solicitation.
Yeah. Constant. That's right.
Dude.
Well, it's unnerving as much as it is liberating that nothing is about you.
Yeah, because you totally see, it's like you're like, I'm totally irrelevant. But you like the relaxation in some way. You know, it feels better, but it's like you kind of still want to be relevant a little. You're like, it's like this weird, you know. Something
give
has
me,
to be about me.
Give me something.
Somebody has to be interested in me besides me.
That's the hope.
Nope.
Through observation and conversation and consideration of the warp and woof of conscious contact. Curiously, if not miraculously, you can observe the texture of what we might refer to as reality, which is curious. So, because otherwise, if you were purely the product of your own neurotic identification, well, that would be kind of a miserable dead end. And you could say that most humans are, you know, living under the influence of a miserable dead end.
It's about the way I felt it at the 3 o'clock this morning. There. 3 to 5.
It's 3 to 5. You had your miserable dead end appointment.
I was working on the basement of the house in my mind all over again, just revisiting the same thing with dust coming down and cutting and hellish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We go to mind and imagination. You could say by default. Which is a way of, occupying self through abstraction. Because the mind is not capable of intimacy with reality. The mind is only capable of heresy.
Is there something capable of comprehending reality?
Reality itself, which can't be the kind of comprehension that we usually refer to.
Right.
Yeah. Right. We usually refer to comprehension as placing some kind of subject or experience in some kind of context, which might be related to a spiritual or scientific or whatever secular explanation. But then it becomes an object.
It's like your synchronistic scale thing on Facebook or whatever. It's just synchronistic scale stitched together with the storyline.
Yeah, that's right.
Like toe, foot. It's just these scales that are just, you know, body, hand, and you're just stitching it together in this very bizarre fantasy world.
Yeah.
It's just scales.
It's all it is. It's cascading scales.
And there's not really any scales. You've made them all up.
They're all made up.
So it's like,
yeah, that's right. Cascading scales suggests that your experience is either the consequence of something, that it's related to something, that you have, some kind of power. And all of this luscious rumination is pure fantasy. That doesn't make it good or bad or correct or incorrect or anything. It's just the revelation of what appears in mind is the imagination of scales that suggest context or consequence. And that, you could say, kind of beautiful palette of imagination. How could you put it? You know, curiously suggests self. Curiously suggests individuated identification.
Well, it automatically has to be subject-object, right? I mean, as soon as it starts, bang, you know? There's a perspective all of a sudden.
Well, it's funny. I mean, subject-object and perspective and the, you could say, sense of self that those may elicit are all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, the mind, you know, through language can assign names and therefore priority or consequence and temporality to what is observed. Like, well, first it's like this, then it's like that, and then it's like that, and boom, you're fucked. But you see, it's not that way. It's not actually like that, because there is no step A, B, C, D resulting in
all these differentiated steps.
That's see, that because all of that differentiation, which we're, you know, marvelously capable of, is again a form of fantasy.
Do you feel like there's a stepwise approach? I'm sort of answering my own question. You know, like the idea of this differentiation can get more and more vast. So that pretty soon it just all folds into a unification, you know?
Well, the language of the sages, you know, points to that.
Yeah.
Like, which is, like, to answer the question, is there anything capable of the of an apprehension of reality?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, reality is pretty capable of it. But that comprehension is no comprehension at all.
I guess, yeah, comprehension.
Yeah, comprehension is already, you know, too downstream. So, one is already, you could say, as perfectly realized as you're ever going to be. Yeah. If there were such a thing. And that the fondness we have for mind and self and body and temporality and consequence and imagination, in a sense, you know, kind of obscures the already present inclusivity of the entirety of being. So we're rethinking, you know, suffering cause one, which is, you've convinced yourself that you're not God. That you are the consequence in a material, right, plenum of the Big Bang and
shitty parenting. In a fucked up culture?
In a fucked up culture, yeah.
Where right. Trump might be president.
Yeah.
Oh, not good.
Right. That's the default of one's consciousness is to go to the banal presumption of, you know, individuation and being creature centric. And when you look at what is the evidence that I rely upon, consciously or otherwise, to convince myself that my experience is that of a creature, itself a consequence of events that occurred yesterday or a billion or 14 billion years ago? And so consciousness identifies with whatever it finds, you know, as itself, but in our case, apart from. So that means you must be the outcome of something other than you, which means you're consequential. You're a creature in space-time. And what's reinforcing that? I don't know if sensation is reinforcing it. Is sensation reinforcing this notion that you're a creature in space-time?
I mean, I wonder if I have sensation when I dream. You know, it would seem as
depends on how vivid the dream.
I guess.
and whether the vividness in the so-called dream is being mirrored, you know, in your physical sleeping body.
Well, you know, it's like, and
I
either don't believe in or completely believe in the idea that we can project to other creatures. But, for example, a monkey or a dog or any number of creatures seem to have sensations, seem to, you know.
Yeah.
And does that make them self-aware?
See, this is the funny thing. You think you only anthropomorphize other animals and objects, but you actually are anthropomorphizing yourself. You have to start there.
you're right. Yourself is just part of the whole,
the whole thing. And then you compare yourself anthropomorphized to other things, but you're not actually anthropomorphized either.
Like
60 degrees.
Pretty much. Which is that you could say the, you know, the creative movement of scales and association with these scales as a verifiable reality that you find yourself construed in as an observer. You're an observer of phenomena, an individuated, separate, call it conscious, sentient, self-aware observer of phenomena. And you didn't do this. So there must be someone or something else that could be held responsible for the curious realization that something's going on, and I can't be held responsible for it.
Well, to say I didn't do this means that I actually have accepted that there's this changing thing going on that's outside of me. Doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it assume that there's already accepted?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
That there's...
That's right. You're already in receipt of phenomena.
Right.
In a way that places you as an individual.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah.
It's really funny.
Right. That's just like the bang. Well, you know, it's all, no matter what you want to call it, it's all the same thing.
That's right. Yeah. The commencement of neurosis.
Yeah.
I should rename it. Are you a big banger? No, we refer to it now as the commencement of neurosis.
Or con.
Con. That's right.
The big con.
The big con.
Con!
Right. That's right. Not the Star Trek con.
Oh.
Like the Big Lebowski con.
Yes.
Commencement of neurosis. So, if there were freedom, and even that's curious, right?
Yeah.
What? Freedom from what? Freedom from whom? Yeah. But the suggestion of, you know, the self-realization game might not have anything to do with how you conduct yourself in your life, you know, whether you have behavioral advantages, magical powers, you know, insights into your past lives, levitation. Those may occur, and God bless you if they do. But we're looking at it, you know, from, I would say, I don't know what to say, a little more subtle and more curious point of view, which is you unwind from the implication of all the scales that you have taken to be true or binding.
Yeah, you just give them all the big middle fingers up.
Yeah, it's a double-barreled bird flip.
But it's weird because it's really just you giving yourself the, you know, you just have to tell yourself to fuck off.
Yeah, that's right.
The whole thought thing, you're just like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, if anyone needs to fuck off, well, it turns out that has to be you.
Yeah, well, you as a life coach.
Yes.
Needs to be fired.
Yeah.
And then don't flip the bird. Maybe fire in a Bunsen burner room. You know, I don't know.
Fire your life coach. That's right. Because if we don't give some attention to, let's say, the unraveling of the myth of scales, which is right consciousness individuated, consciousness is a consequential outcome of God knows what, tangling with the, you know, the uncertainty and vague arena of experiencing. If we don't get out from under that influence, then
you're gonna
be always under the influence of creature or under the influence of phenomena, and how you relate to phenomena, how you crave phenomena, how you resist phenomena, which is back to the Buddha's attraction and aversion, right? Yeah. Right, how you crave, and by virtue of craving, how you avert, then they're the same. So realization, if there were such a thing, would have to be curiously unchartable, irrational. You couldn't find it, in other words, within the boundary field of creature. Because if you could, it wouldn't be satisfying. Is that a giant bumblebee? Holy shit, we're going to die.
That's where all the bees went. They can disappear if they disturb it.
One giant bee. God.
It's alien intelligence.
It's however big it is, man, that could like rip your head off. Sting you right in the face.
Late for this to be happening, this unknown noise.
Yes.
You know, from a professional, for the neighbors, whatever.
Well, you know.
I mean, I know it's not too late, but, you know.
Well, they probably had a rain day, so they had to make up for something, you know.
And it must have flown away.
Yeah.
We're safe. Nope, it's back.
It was just back. Having a snack.
Yeah, snacking on a dog. It's not every sangha that's visited by a giant bumblebee.
The alien intelligence.
Part of it. The third step.
The third step.
Well, they're attracted to this stuff.
Yeah, the bees are attracted to this. Yeah.
That's
right.
Saturday Night Live thing.
Is it a bee to honey or more like a fly to shit?
Going with the fly.
Go with the fly? Yeah, go with the fly.
I'm sorry, my mother, and she said, why does everything always have to turn into be about poop with you? I'm like, I just started laughing so hard. I'm like,
you're on today. Just change it to honey.
That's right. That's right. Change it to honey and put on a diaper.
I've got to go take a honey. Well, that sounds so special. We'll hypnotize you and change your vocabulary accordingly.
Sensation of its own accord does not suggest individuation.
No, it seems like, you know, there's a reaction to it, you know, this mental reaction to sometimes sensations, you know, like, oh, that felt good, or I think I like this, you know, it's that kind of thing, or I don't know, you know, it's not what I wanted, or, you know, it's all this stuff that goes on, and pretty soon, immediately, you're reflecting upon it. So I'm like, well, this isn't getting me anywhere.
It's really difficult, if not impossible, to, let's say, explore what you might refer to as your own experience and parse it out to, well, what's consciousness and what's identification and what's sensation and what's body and what's memory and what's attraction and what's aversion and...
Sounds like a lot of work.
Well, yeah. So there's a pointing to the cessation of differentiation, the cessation of individuation.
I mean, that sounds like that's the whole thing, just like everything else sounds like it's the whole thing. You know, we're saying the same thing, but I mean, I kind of like that. I don't know, somehow it rings for me or something like that. I'm thinking about that discussion I had with that super duper Christian. It's like, just let go, you know. You have these feelings. Why do you have to gel them into some belief or something? Just see if you can, like, expand it, you know, to just let all that stuff go, you know. Reciting scripture, you know, or something. You know, in other words, just, look, you know, love what's there, but messing with the concepts.
Well, religion is practiced as a form of pride. Pride of faith, mm-hmm. Pride of belief, pride of you know, reciting the good book, whether it's the Pali Canon or the Old or New Testament, whether it's the Quran or, you know, the Talmud or the fucking Zohar.
I think it's a way of people to say, hey, I'm somebody, I made a decision, you know, and I decided to entertain this notion and I found it to be satisfying, and you should too. And I think every
time first I'll tell you about it, and then if you reject it, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just an excuse to talk about it and, you know, put themselves out there in the conceptual reality or whatever, you know. Just reifying.
Human as fool.
And I find that I get nowhere with people that are like that. And at least I can think of some real good examples where I went down that road and it's like, okay, they're gone. And that's fine, you know. I mean,
well, it's fine as long as they're not chasing you with a pitchfork.
Yeah. Well, you can keep your distance, your physical distance, in many of these things.
Yeah, that is. Not if you were a communist back in the day, though.
Well, this hallucination field, you know, called creature or mind. Wow.
We can talk about it. We can do it if you want. I should feel like doing it. Take me 5 minutes to get up.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, no, Jane, you should definitely do that.
He's gone away. He's just, it's going to take a minute. He's just blown the hair off of the box.
Green hair.
Glad someone is neatening the place up. This problem of convincing yourself that you're not God creates a lot of enmity.
Yeah, it does. Jeez.
A lot of anger and enmity. Yeah. And fear, rage. Yeah.
Well, people just, my impression, and maybe I have this impression because I was like that too. It's like, I can imagine them looking, saying, what are you getting at? You know, what are you trying to say? You know, it's all like, there's something here I'm not getting. You know, in other words, you're saying something that has a hook to it, but I'm not catching the hook. And it's like, no, I'm not saying anything that has a hook. I mean, I don't think I am. I might be. Maybe it has a little hook. I don't know. But that's not the point, you know. And it's like, it's almost as if, no. You have to believe in something, and you got to go for it, you know. And it's like, you got to decide, you know, that type of thing, you know. And
well, sure. I mean, that malignancy, you know, is a driving force for the species.
Yeah.
That malignancy is violent and violating. Through pride and belief and, you know, the a million ways that it suggests xenophobia. We rarely question the confidence that we have about taking up residence in consciousness as a creature. As an, you know, independent, individuated, willful, choiceful, desireful creature.
It's an assumption, right?
You wonder. It's not even an assumption. Right? I mean, it's so baked in.
Yeah, it pre... Yeah. Occupies. Yeah.
When you're taking a leap of faith or a leap of heresy to recalibrate or reconsider the nature of experiencing not through the eyes of a creature. As not being the consequence of anything. Or having influence or consequence on something else. In the whole co-create with reality thing is, I wonder, because it just, you become filled instantaneously with insatiable desire by being a creator, so you can have a job, a relationship, success, spiritual experiences. Why would you want that?
With all the other creators, you can like have it.
Yeah, we can all hold hands and turn off the Navy sonar, so the whales don't have to, you know, their ears don't have to bleed. It's bad out there.
It's pretty bad.
Everything is being violated.
This is violated stuff. That's the fucked up part. You're like, okay, so wait, that's all this does is violated stuff?
God, the great sodomizer.
I mean, we like to think that we have control or that our thoughts control. You know, there was something
that's like why I think we like to witch it up. Like, witching it up is not necessarily an issue. It can be fun, but when you then... It's like you want to put a spell on something. You're spelling everything, you know, and then you have some kind of control, imaginary control.
And it's like the same, that's just using that language, but, you know, I think everybody does it.
Yeah, your personality, you break it out however you think you might get your way, you know, give them a cute face, a little smile, whatever it is you do is like a weird spell that you're trying, you know, it's like a strange...
You know, I don't know how much to believe in studies, but... there was some study that looked at people that had a positive outlook and thought they could control things, and, you know, this whole rich, you know, mental thing about goodness in health and the diet and stuff like that, and others that were like dire and like, all is lost, you know. And they found
the same results.
They had the same results, you know, as far as like
getting what they wanted
or something like that. It's like there was no statistical difference, which is like, nah, surely the positive people had to bring on more health, you know, or all that stuff. And it's like, at least not according to that study.
But everything is like that. You know, I know plenty of people that can smoke like crazy and like no issues, and I have like, you know, a week of cigarettes and I'm like, I'm going to die.
Somebody snuff in college and they get lip cancer and they die or something, you know. Other people, you know, like, you know, my stepfather smoked and drank from age 9 on.
So he's was
86,
right?
you know, or something, you know, and it's like, no problem, you know. Well, I mean, it probably did kill him.
Something was bound to.
Yeah, day six. It's arbitrary. It's all very arbitrary.
It's like the criminal justice system. Arbitrary is all. That's definitely arbitrary.
Pretty arbitrary.
Pretty random. Well, I'm saying, I mean, you can determine reasons, you know, but you can't figure them out ahead of time. Too successful. Well, sometimes you can, of course. But, I mean, you can't know all the reasons. What's the point of it?
Very playful, this thing. It's very playful.
It's insane.
It's insane.
Constant solicitation. Constant insanity. It's just like, what?
Yeah. We go into arbitration in our own imagination. We plead our case. We're the defendant and we're the...
we're playing both roles.
Victim, and we're the attorneys and the judge and the.
But in your head, you can go through them so fast that it's
jury
back and forth. It's not like you have to change clothes or anything. You know, you just it's like so easy. You don't even realize half the time, like what you know. If you slow it down, you're like, who's what?
Who's speaking now?
Yeah, like it's just a jumble of psychosis. Yeah. Really, that's just kind of like flying. You're like Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's like, is this, what is me in all of this?
Yeah, it's a jumble.
Where am I in all this? It occurs to me, you know, it's like, it's just.
The interface, if you will, with conscious contact, in this case, in the mental sphere, is bananas. It's totally bananas. And then we convince ourselves of being whatever it is we take ourselves to be, behaviorally and attitudinally, and what chances we have of whatever it is we might be interested in. And this streaming presentation, this all fabricated.
It's a big calculator up there.
So there's a, call it, there's the presentation let's say of some psychic spaciousness. We're not tangling with the mind factory or the identity or the rumination that insists on past or present or future. So the, what would you call it, the intensity of imagination and what it's conveying, you could say softens or relaxes.
Yeah. I'm thinking of two different types of, for lack of a better term, mindfuck.
That's a good term.
And the one is just totally being caught up in reverie, imagination, you know, ideas of the future. And the other is being, having being stuck in a place, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Being stuck in a place in your mind that you don't like.
Yes.
Now, it seems like all of these things are going to be experienced, and I'm just going to bring this into it just for kicks, like under LSD or some hallucinogen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have enough experience with it, but I'm thinking that...
There's still time.
Yeah, that's wrong. Hold on for that. that a bad trip would be one of those things. And a nice trip would be the lack of those things. But I don't know if I'm simplifying it or complicating it or whatever. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just what occurs to me. It's just an observation that I'm throwing out there to see if it sticks.
Hmm. Like pasta and a wall.
Exactly. Like I'm thinking of Sid Barrett, you know.
Hmm.
Our good friend Sid. What the hell was going on with him? Was he stuck in a bad place?
Hmm.
Or was he living out of sync? You know, he was stuck in the non-present, let's say.
There is no end to Bardo. There's no limit to Bardo. Even expressed in what we call, you know, human experience.
Do you want this?
Without acid. I had an experience where I went to
without acid.
See this apartment, and then when I went back,
yeah,
the floors were like completely different than what I like. There was drastic, drastic differences. I was like, is this the same fucking place?
Wait a minute,
like,
you were going by your memory, you're saying,
yeah,
and then you.
It was like not. There was one floor in particular. The kitchen floor was completely different.
You were looking at different things. You just filled in the blanks.
I don't know. It was crazy. I'm still confused. Like, I keep looking at the floor, and I'm like, I still have an image in my head of this first planning that I said. It's totally, I'm like, I don't know. It's too weird.
Probably had a psychic image of where Syd Barrett first lived or something.
You don't know. Like, what the fuck?
I don't know.
Could have been like a weird portal that I like dipped in and out of two different things. I don't know.
That's right.
I mean, I really don't. Like, I don't know. I think it's the same place.
Maybe.
Go to sets of toothpicks.
Toothpick song.
But it does, like, changing the focus of scale can get trippy very easily. Like, focusing, you know, really extensively for even just a little bit of time on this little ant is a very different experience than just focusing on the scale of people. Like, I was at the river the other day, and there was a boat, and you can't help, there's something like the human-to-human, you know, obsessive. And then I just changed to a spider, and it's like this spider observing the spider, but like the human was just in the background as this small, like, little boat thing. But the spider was really big, because that's where I, you know...
It was closer to you.
That's what I was looking at, you know, that's what I was...
Yeah.
Not because it was the attention...
Yes.
...placed... that the spider was more important or just as fascinating as the human dimension, you know, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, that game of whatever it is we call human. I don't know what that is, but you know what I mean? Just kind of...
What's interesting is that it seems to me that the good trip may not have real content in it. You know what I mean? It's just no. And by content, I guess automatically I'm thinking mental content. You know what I mean? So it's just like the lousy space that you find yourself in mentally.
Yeah.
Or what and. If that has a timeline to it, you know, you take that away, the mental content, I don't know that you can make any claims except for there's maybe you could say a fullness or something like that. But it's not specific. Again, it's the openness, you know.
It's non-specific.
Yeah. I become aware of that sometimes. I've talked about, you know, some of these places. Sometimes I'm in the car and I'm driving through, and all of a sudden it's like, woods all around, the valleys and stuff. It's beautiful. And I do find myself saying, look at that. There's a tree, you know, and look at that. And I'm specific. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I don't have to do that. You know?
Yes.
There's no need to.
That that call it attracting force to suggest or report on specificity.
Right.
You could say that's the engine or the genesis of self.
Yeah. I see a bird come down and I think, man, if I wasn't colorblind, I'll bet you I would say, look at that purple bird or something. But now I have no clue what it is.
So you do see purple birds.
Well, I see them whatever color they appear to me. I don't know. Who can tell?
Who can tell? So there's this immersive, non-stop, right, fluid, streaming tickle. Which is non-specific.
So it's here.
The creation of specificity is kind of like targeted myopia.
Yeah.
Because we become enamored of what it appears to be appearing, and then everything that we think about what appears to be appearing, and then the story, the soliloquy of imagination pops in with no delay, fully blown, which is a gesture, you could say, an impulse of specificity.
And they're really...
Scales and specificity are interchangeable in this one.
Yes, scales and specificity.
It feels like there's an impulse, too. I mean, that word sounds right, because at night I'm trying... I keep talking about this, but at night I'm trying to sleep and not dwell on thoughts.
Right.
And then at a certain time in the morning, I'm like, you know what? Forget it. I'm not going to sleep anymore. I'm going to allow myself to just think.
That's
and
right.
It's like... Oh,
yeah.
It's like, okay, let me get up.
Yeah,
like,
right.
All of a sudden, open the doors. And there's an attractiveness to it.
Yes, that's right.
So there is something there.
And turns out Pandora's wearing a really interesting gown.
Yeah. But to shun that for too long just like holds back the, you know, it's like, the doors get flung open much faster than that.
Yeah. Yes. Learning to consider and discover what it feels like to rest in non-specificity is what all the yogas are about. What is it that breaks the back of the myth of individuation? It's strange. This, right, the impulse for the desire, the thrill of dwelling in mind or reverie or specificity, particularization.
I think, in my case, I think a lot of it is just because I live my days most of the they is spent in specificity. So it's like a habit. It's like,
mm-hmm.
that's just what I do, man.
Sure.
So it's like, okay, let me go to there. At least I know what that is, you know. Maybe I can have some fun with it. You know, it's that kind of a...
You could say we, we educate our young,
which is
perhaps better than eating them. You could say far too early. We introduce our children, arguably far too early, to the neurosis of specificity.
Yeah.
You might be better off staying in kindergarten kind of through your 20s. And then start thinking about shit.
Yeah. Have to go through primal therapy otherwise.
I think that, apes are a lot more relaxed with their young.
Yeah. They don't have the same agendas.
A different agenda. Yeah. Yeah, we've become insane as the booby prize of having a neocortex, a dreaming, self-aware, highly symbolic neocortex. Driven us crazy.
But the behavioral stuff, it kind of seems so similar in some ways. It's really funny. Like, my new place, I'm like, I'm just like Fred. I'm like marking everything. It smelled kind of a certain way. I want to smell like me. I'm just rubbing all over everything and putting little stuff up instead of peeing. I'm just putting little knickknacks everywhere. You know?
That's good anyway. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
I don't know that it's that much different, you know?
No.
Yeah, you want to take the strangeness out of it.
You want it to smell like you, be like you, or, you know, yeah, you mark it. It's like a weird, you know.
Everything is leaving its scent.
Yeah.
Everything does this, leaves its scent.
Yeah, it had a distinct scent when I came in, and the scent is changing. It's funny. It's mm-hmm. bizarre. I'm like, odor for seeing that scent. And Fred.
Yeah. Move over. Here comes my aroma. I mean, we are profoundly carnal.
We are. It's funny. It's just like, you know, I don't know what.
Weaning ourselves from specificity is the perennial yogic journey, the Gnostic journey. I mean, you don't see it emphasized in the church or the temple or the mosque. I mean, it's hard to find even in the zendo or the dojo, the meditation hall.
Yeah. It's odd. It's weird. It's like the very, if you want to pretend there's a point, it would be the point. You know?
Instead, we batten down the hatches and become more prideful and more violent. Within the field of the specificity that we've become loyal to, we believe in. the superstition.
Yeah, seems.
Yeah. We've figured out how to convince ourselves that we're not God. Whoever might be responsible for this mess, we sure as shit don't trust. And the last thing on our minds is cessation.
Yeah, and anybody that's practicing cessation is like, that's like the get them off with their heads.
I was having a phone conversation today, and the metaphor that showed up is that imagine yourself in a really cold, cold environment, and
no.
I know that's
no.
And the moment your nose drips, it freezes. So in that way, everyone's nose is snowing. See? Your nose is snowing. That's what you think's going on. Before you even have the slightest thought about anything, your own snot freezes and has become something. So here's this impulse, this ongoing, apparently provocative impulse to particularize, to objectify, place oneself in some kind of context, live under the influence of content. And the discovery, however it comes, you know, gradually fits and starts, a big ecstatic, who the fuck cares? The discovery is this inclusivity stops particularizing. Stops objectifying. It doesn't mean you can't find your car keys or
be habitually neurotic and
or be habitually neurotic and make a living out of it being a comic. Yeah, right.
Where everything has to be in a very specific place.
Yeah. The guy must be pretty good at what he does since it's dark out.
Is it from by
instinct?
Yeah. We're going to get noise complaints.
Just
driving it up on the truck. Mindfulness is really saying too much. You know, mindfulness is, what the fuck? Mindful of what? Is anything you witness, anything that appears in your so-called experience is going to suck you into scales, scales and fascination. That's what attention does. Attention.
Well, isn't that noticing? I mean, noticing is sort of like that.
Well, see, each one of these, you know, well-intentioned, bright metaphors are doing their best to draw your attention to non-specificity, to the immersive, fully inclusive, unbroken, non-dual revelation of non-specificity.
So, I mean, in the realm of specificity,
yes,
something like noticing is maybe a step in the right direction. But if you go to a point of non-specificity, noticing is a step in the wrong direction. You know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, be careful that when you pull a thorn with a thorn, throw the thorns away. Yeah.
That's all double-edged. That's why it's hard to talk about.
Well, the snot freezes instantaneously, so you think you're dwelling in an atmosphere of objects as a subject or as an object yourself. When you're not... That's what drives us insane. The pressure of imagined continuity of experience as self.
It's much different, that context of a feeling, than a shifting, like, vignettes with self.
Yes.
In it.
Mm-hmm.
Self, it, like, can still be there, but it's just like observing anything in a strange artscape, you know? It's like a weird, it's just...
Mm-hmm.
You mean sort of more of a detachment? Is that what you mean, sort of?
Yeah, like, you're just as interested in that as anything. Just
You're just as interested, is that what you said?
Yeah, it's not, like... Well, I don't know.
Why make it something different and less or something?
Well, instead of taking everything in your experiencing in through your identity, your identity is just kind of an aspect of an artscape that's not really that, you know, it's just kind of...
It's just one of the parts. Yeah,
maybe. Maybe. I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
Even that is like... I mean...
Yeah. You can't conclude. You can't conclude.
It might show up, it might not. You know, whatever. It might rain. It might not, you know.
What does any pee outside? We can stop all of this foolishness.